We know that nobody puts Baby Houseman in a corner, but what about Baby Kellerman? Dirty Dancing is next on Fanacek. S2, E2, Fanacek, you are back as a guest.
I'm back.
You're honored to be here, I assume?
I am.
What's your name going to be today?
Luna.
Luna. What's that from?
Well, it's from Harry Potter, and she's a Ravenclaw, and I'm personally a Ravenclaw, and I just felt like doing that today.
Oh, wow. No, I hadn't really seen any of that stuff. I'm busy having a life and whatnot.
Yeah.
Burn!
No. Harry Potter is the best.
Yeah, it's, I mean, obviously, I've seen the movies. Never read the books. Well, actually, I'm not sure I read the first book. Wasn't for me. Sorcerer's Stone? Is that correct?
You don't even get to say it out loud. Like, if you haven't read them all.
I thought it was Voldemort you couldn't say out loud. No, I can't even say the books out loud.
Exactly.
Fair enough.
It's not fair.
Fair enough. Well, hey, great. We have a lot to get through today. Season 2 episodes run longer than Season 1 episodes. So, because you're on the show, though, I do want to start off with time for the birthday game. It's time for the game. It's time for the birthday game. Shoop, shoop. Interesting birthday game today. I found something. It's not a great birthday day, but an interesting birthday day. So today is Vanessa Lachey's birthday.
Oh, God.
However, today is also her husband, Nick Lachey's birthday.
Oh, my gosh. I feel like
now you'd be
at
pissed.
Some point I knew that.
You'd be so mad if you had to share a birthday with your spouse. That would really bother you.
Yeah.
I don't think you like sharing a birthday month with anybody.
No.
All right, so I'm going to let you off the hook with Vanessa Lachey, because who the hell knows who she is, really?
I know who she is.
Okay, well then, fine. You want to guess her birthday? Guess her birthday, smartass.
Well, if I guess or Nick's, then I guess hers, right? Or are they not the same year?
I'm not telling you anything.
Okay, so I feel like he is a similar age to me, but maybe a little bit, but maybe same. I'm going to say he's 42, and I'm going to say she's 40.
Ooh, Nick Lachey is 49 years old today.
Nuh-uh.
Yes, he is.
Oh,
Vanessa
wow.
Lachey, I believe, don't quote me, she is 42 years old today.
Okay, so that's my 2-year range with her.
One more, quick one.
Being on the podcast while I do these is clearly stressful.
quick one. Eric Dane was born today. How old is Eric Dane? Was he McDreamy or McSteamy?
Oh, is that why I know his name?
On that shit fest of a show.
He was McSteamy.
Okay.
McDreamy was Patrick Dempsey.
Now, you know that show is still on. Now, you and I have been together 17 years total, married for almost 15. When we started dating, that show was a couple of seasons in. How the hell long has that show been on the air? And why?
Yeah.
Who's watching that? They have not explored.
Clearly people. I don't know.
Oh, anyway. Talk about a great gig for Ellen Pompeo, though.
Yeah.
Oh, we were just talking about old school before we started the podcast. She was an old school.
Oh, my gosh.
She was Luke Wilson's love interest.
Oh, yeah. All right. Come on. Back to McSteamy.
How old is Eric Dane? By the way, his ex-wife now, Rebecca Gayheart, is in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Not that we're talking about that show or that movie anymore. But
there is a connection.
There is a connection.
Okay. So, let's see. He's 47.
Eric Dane is the big 5-0.
All right. 3 years. That's a little bit out.
Yeah, he's 50. All right. So today we are talking about a juggernaut of a film, 1987's Dirty Dancing. All right. So I'm going to run some. Now, I'm assuming you've seen it. You like it? Fan of it?
It is one of my top favorite movies.
It's a classic. I mean, when I say juggernaut, I'm not kidding. Check this out. So again, 1987 numbers here. It was a huge hit. It grossed $214 million worldwide. It was the first film to ever sell 1 million copies on home video.
Oh, wow.
One of those was to my mother. She owned 2 movies. She owned that and Pretty Woman. So there you go.
I owned Pretty Woman.
Yeah, everyone owned that. The soundtrack, that generated 2 multi-platinum albums and multiple singles, including one sung by Swayze himself, right? She's Like the Wind.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bold
She's Like the Wind.
Just a fool to believe I have anything she needs.
Hey, I'm supposed to sing on this podcast.
She's Like the Wind. That's a bold move. Who is he? Like Sinatra, this guy? I mean, because he's not known for singing. I wonder if that was like part of his contract. I'll do your film, but I got to sing a song on the soundtrack, because I'm assuming he was
talks
like
that.
He was like 1950s.
Yeah, clearly.
The kid stays in the picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, so he sung that. Of course, the big hit was I've Had the Time of My Life, performed by Bill Medley and Jennifer Warner. That won an Academy Award for Best Original Song. It also won Best Best Original Song, Golden Globe, Grammy for Best Pop Performance by a Duo Group or Group with Vocals. So, I mean, this thing's a juggernaut. It led to a 2004 prequel called Dirty Dancing, Havana Nights. Never saw it. Don't plan on seeing it.
I didn't see that either.
Swayze did a cameo in it and got paid $5 million for a cameo.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I'm like, wow. I'd have done it for $500,000, but $5 million is fine.
Yeah.
The stage version of this movie came out. They toured everywhere. They did a 2017 made-for-TV remake and a rumored sequel for 2024, which will bring back Jennifer Grey. Not that anyone's going to recognize her, but
no,
we'll talk about that later.
No, I was just going to say.
So, I mean, everyone knows this movie, right? But that's not what we're talking about today. See, that would be too easy for Fanacek. We're going to talk about the 1988 TV show that came out based on this movie that didn't last very long. It was kind of a shit fest. No one cares about it. So, of course, I want to explore
it. There was a TV show?
That's what we're talking about today. It was a TV show. But let's
What the hell?
So let's run down the movie. So again, the movie, we're going to talk about this loud. Again, the movie, the cast, we're going to talk about the main character. So the cast, star Patrick Swayze is Johnny Castle. We'll go into each of these. Jennifer Grey played Baby Houseman. Jerry Orbach is Jake Houseman, the late Jerry Orbach. Cynthia Rhodes, Penny Johnson. Jack Weston, he's passed away. He played Max Kellerman. And Jane Brucker played the sister, Lisa Houseman, who I think was actually kind of one of the better parts of the movie.
And this is all movie.
This is all movie. We're not talking about the show yet. Okay. So no, the movie's a big deal. So I mean, we got back to Jennifer Grey. Her nose job. This movie made her a household name. And then she got the nose job and it just wiped out her career. We talked about this in my last episode because my last episode was another Jennifer Grey classic, Ferris Bueller. They made that into a TV show. And I just don't understand. She was in this iconic film, Ferris Bueller, and then she gets the lead in this. She was also in Red Dawn, which people would argue is a kind of an iconic 80s movie. Got the nose job and derailed her career. Really interesting choice. But Winona Ryder was also considered for the role in the movie, as was, and I could see this, Sarah Jessica Parker, a young SJP.
I could see Sarah Jessica Parker.
And she can move. She danced. She had some good dance scenes in Footloose. So
she has a little more of like a quirky, I guess they're both quirky.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, they're not traditional beauties. I'd argue that Sarah Jessica Parker is prettier.
I didn't mean looks. Oh. I was kind of talking about just like a general energy.
I only see women in terms of looks.
Obviously.
No, I mean, obviously I don't know her that well as an actor, but I just feel like looks wise, she kind of fits the role of a baby houseman. And she's kind of petite, right? SJP is a little girl, I think, right? She's 5'3" maybe. So I don't know. It kind of works. But it also made Swayze a household name. I mean, he'd been bouncing around a lot. Again, iconic movies, but I don't think he was a household name. He was coming off The Outsiders, Red Dawn with Jennifer Grey, which we'll talk about. And then he lands this, and this launches a major career for him. After this is Ghost, Point Break. I mean, the guy had a major career. It made him a household name and a name for future kids, by the way. I've come across a couple Swayzes.
Yes.
Our daughter has a friend named Swayze or knows a kid named Swayze.
Yes.
And I saw it on a reality show. There was one of the housewives show had a daughter named Swayze.
That sounds correct.
Mm-hmm. But since we're talking about other actors considered for the Patrick Swayze role. Billy Zane. Billy Zane went so far as...
Yeah, interesting.
He made it far. Oh. Like, I think they put him on video, and I think it was...
So he dances?
I think the dancing derailed it.
Oh, there we go.
Val Kilmer.
Okay. All right.
And Val Kilmer had some dancing scenes in an earlier film, Top Secret, which was his first major film. I think it was like a spoof of spy movies, and he had some dancing scenes in there.
Look, Patrick Swayze's obviously the best, but mm-hmm. If he was not available, I could see Val Kilmer at that time.
Check out this next name. I think this is an odd name to be out there. But he was apparently considered Benicio del Toro. That's scary.
Really?
Well, apparently...
I don't know what he was doing in the 80s. Like, I just know him from like mid-90s onward.
I think everyone does, but no.
So I can't picture him... Obviously,
also, he's
mid-90s.
He's a frightening guy. Like, I don't know. I just don't see him in this role. But apparently, the character was going to be Italian. I mean, like, that was like a big thing, like an Italian last name.
Okay.
When they gave it to Swayze, they changed it.
Okay.
So Swayze got it. They changed the character from Italian to, I don't know, generically white. And then Jennifer Grey was pissed, right? They did not get along. So they didn't like each other in Red Dawn. She, I think, more towards him, was like, I do not like this guy.
Oh.
The story goes, it was basically him. He sat her down and he told her, look, this is going to be really big for both of us. So, like, let's get through it. Apparently, they ended up working through it. They became very good friends and stayed lifelong friends until he passed away from, I think, pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
Some interesting notes. Again, this isn't about the movie, but we've got to talk about it. It was choreographed by Kenny Ortega, who was trained by one of your faves, Gene Kelly. Yeah.
Oh. Dun, 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 dun,
Singing in the Rain, right? They filmed in the South because most of the Borscht Belt resorts were gone. So obviously the premise of the movie is the Hausman family goes to Kellerman's, which is in the Catskills. It's one of those resorts. They call it the Borscht Belt. That the Borscht Belt, I think the name actually came from the performers who would go there, which is largely Jewish. So the guests were typically Jewish. The resorts were owned by Jewish people, and the performers were all Jewish. When I say performers, a lot of stand-up comedians came through the Borscht Belt. Billy Crystal made a great movie about it called Mr. Saturday Night. Even Jerry Seinfeld, early in his career, did some Borscht Belt stuff. Jackie Mason. So it's kind of like, here's the Bible Belt. They call that the Borscht Belt.
Got it.
There's a great, great documentary on Netflix, if you ever get a chance, called Welcome to Kutcher's, and it's called The Last Catskills Resort. So yeah, it's on Netflix. Again, it's called Welcome to Kutcher's, The Last Catskills Resort. Fascinating documentary about one of the last hold-ons, one of the last resorts still up there, because that whole lifestyle has gone away.
That sounds good.
It was really neat. They did a good job of depicting it, I think, in The Marvelous Miss Maisel. Remember they did a whole season where they're there?
Yes.
And what I never understood about this, and I don't know much about it, but who the hell had the time for that? Like, obviously, it wasn't just wealthy people, although a lot of rich people did it, but it seemed like it was even a middle-class thing. But who could go away for 2-3 months? Like, what guy with a job? Because back then, it was traditionally the man worked, the woman stayed at home.
Yeah.
But these are doctors. I mean, they're all going up to the Catskills.
Is there, like, a train option?
There must have been. I just don't understand who had the time to bring their entire family somewhere, basically, to camp for, like, 2 months.
Yeah.
But anyway, it seems like it would be really neat.
And
it was huge for performers because it was a huge – it was all these venues in upstate New York for musicians and stand-up comedians, most famously for the stand-up comedians.
Yeah.
And again, if you ever get a chance beyond that documentary I mentioned, but Billy Crystal made what I thought was a really neat movie called Mr. Saturday Night about a fictional stand-up comedian who came out of the Borscht Belt.
Yeah.
And it's actually, last I heard, it's on Broadway now. Like, he developed it into a Broadway play, I think a one-person show. But anyway, I just think it's really interesting. But this is not about the movie. That would be too easy. So we're going to talk about the little-known 1988 TV series. So away we go, folks. So it premiered on CBS on October 29th, 1988. It ran for a whopping 11 episodes. That is epic fail. Yeah, so not even a season. The typical season is 22 episodes, right? Sometimes if you're a mid-season replacement, you'll get 11 to 13. This didn't even last. So the cast is a mess, and we're going to have to work through this. You're going to have to pay attention, everyone.
Okay.
All right, I'm explained by reading the show's synopsis
deep
first.
Breath.
So let me read the synopsis, and actually I'm going to get off of IMDb and read something else. So check this out, because a lot of this whole season's about movies that were made into TV shows. And one of the recurring themes is not only did they do something they shouldn't do, but then they fuck with it. Like, they take a simple premise and they fuck with it. So check this out.
It's not just
the television series followed the same basic premise of the film with a few variations. The series was still set at Kellerman's during the summer of 1963, but instead of being the daughter of a resort guest, Baby became the daughter of Max Kellerman himself. Now, in the film, her last name was Hausman.
Yeah.
In the movie, she's Baby Kellerman. So she's the daughter of the resort owner Max Kellerman in the show. And she was put in charge of Johnny as Kellerman's talent director. So now she's Patrick's, the dancer's boss, right?
I know Johnny.
Much like the movie, Baby noted that she intended to attend Mount Holyoke in the fall, so it was not clear how the series would continue once the summer ended. As was the case in the film, Baby and Johnny had an adversarial relationship, but eventually came to respect each other. As this was a weekly series, Baby and Johnny did not fall in love immediately, but as the series progressed, their feelings grew. So I'm going to walk you through it again. So let's break down the characters. We're going to go all one by one on these. Johnny Castle, which was played by Patrick Swayze, is still Johnny Castle. Now he's played by Patrick Cassidy, another Patrick.
Uh-huh.
First he's Patrick Swayze, then he's Patrick Cassidy.
Got it.
Okay. Baby Hausman is now Baby Kellerman, and that's played by Melora Hardin, okay, who I love, and and you know her too when I tell you who she is. Jake Hausman, who was Jerry Orbach, is gone altogether because Max Kellerman, who is played by Jack Weston, is now her dad, and in the show he's played by McLean Stevenson, which got me excited. I like McLean Stevenson. Really cool stuff we're going to talk about with McLean Stevenson. Now, Lisa Hausman, who is played by Jane Brooker, is now Lisa Kellerman, right? No, she's not in the show at all. So there is no sister at all. So finally, Penny Johnson, who was played by Cynthia Rhodes, that was the dancing partner.
Yeah, yeah.
She is now Penny Rivera, played by Constance Marie. So it's all kind of a mess. So I'm going to recap that one real quick because I have notes here. Okay, so that's a lot. So to recap, Johnny Castle is Johnny Castle. Baby Hausman is Baby Kellerman, whose dad is now Max Kellerman, eliminating the need for Jake Hausman. Lisa Hausman disappears altogether, and Penny Johnson is now Penny Rivera. I am beat. All right, tune in next week for the next episode of Fan Check. Okay.
That was very good.
One interesting note, though, that they did do, and I'm not going to do a big dive on it because I'm trying to compare the actors and everything. That's really what this is about. But they created a character for the show called Norman Bryant, which is funny. I actually used to work with a guy named Norman Bryant. But he was played by Paul Feig. And Paul Feig has a huge career. Paul Feig is a famous writer, director, producer. He's written, I'm just going to go through his stuff. He was one of the creators and producers of Freaks and Geeks. He's directed or produced a lot of Melissa McCarthy's movies. He's directed a lot of The Office. Pretty sure he directed, I'm actually positive, he directed Bridesmaids. So Paul Feig went on to have a huge career. He's really closely associated with like Judd Apatow, involved in a lot of those projects. But and he directed Melora Hardin in a lot of Office episodes. So there you go. That's who Melora Hardin is, but we'll get to it. Let me read then the synopsis of the TV show, which again, you know, not unlike the movie. So let me pull it up here. Dirty Dancing. Got to find the TV show version of it there. Here we go. So a continuation of the movie of the same name where Francis Baby Houseman falls in love with camp dance instructor Johnny Castle. All that's bullshit because first of all, it's not a continuation. Also, it's not even Baby Houseman anymore.
Wow.
So I don't know what's going on here. Lies. IMDb is full of lies.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. So let's, one thing I like to do is I like to read the first few synopses to give you a feel for the show.
Okay.
So here's the pilot. It's called Baby It's You. And again, October 29th, 1988. That was a good day.
It was a good day.
Baby is pushed into the talent director's job at her father's resort and must overcome the resentment of dance teacher Johnny Castle and gain independence from her overprotective dad. Go, girl. Episode 2, Heat Wave. All right, now we're in November of 88, and I'm about to turn 12. Okay.
I've literally was like, nine.
All right. Almost Baby nine. And Johnny always seem to disagree and get on each other's nerves, but during an unusually long heat wave and following a series of mishaps, they are thrown together and develop a powerful attraction to each other. Let's go. I'm going to jump to the last episode. So okay. Episode number 11, January 21st of 1989.
Nice.
And I doubt this was an intended ending. This was probably like,
right.
They happened to air this one and then they got the axe. In an attempt to get noticed by big Broadway producer Harold Ballantyne, Johnny begins to behave in a way that upsets the rest of the staff. His only chance to regain the respect is to be honest with himself and with Baby.
Oh.
Turns out he's gay. I'm just kidding. But anyway, so that's that. So that's what, let's compare the cast now. We're going to learn about the TV versions. So let's start with the star of the movie, arguably the star of the movie, Johnny Castle, played by, in the TV show, Patrick Cassidy. And I could not be more excited about an actor because I had never heard of him. But then I was like, oh, this guy's got a great background. So he was born January 4th, 1962. Dude, he's David Cassidy's half-brother. So he's a famous Cassidy. So he's the son of Shirley Jones and Jack Cassidy. Shirley Jones was the mom in... The Partridge Family, which is funny because she was David Cassidy's stepmom at the time. And that's not how they got each other got the role. It just kind of worked that way. So Jack Cassidy being their dad. And I just posted a thing on my Facebook page about Jack Cassidy. As you know, I love Columbo. And what's considered the pilot. So Columbo, the pilot, if you will, was really a TV thing. It's like a one-off movie. Then they decided to make it into a regular thing. So the official pilot, if you will, is called Murder by the Book. And the killer in it is played by Jack Cassidy. And it's like a great episode. And I know whenever I think of Jack Cassidy, I think of that. But it was directed by a 25-year-old Steven Spielberg. How about that?
Oh, wow.
So before Jaws, man, he was doing Columbo. Yeah. So anyway, so Patrick Cassidy, he's the son of Shirley Jones and Jack Cassidy, middle brother of Sean Cassidy and Ryan Cassidy, younger half-brother, of course, of David Cassidy. So David Cassidy was from Partridge Family Man Undercover, which I've talked about before. Jack, I talked about the Murder by the Book. He was famously burned to death. We talked about this in an episode that you were involved
in.
So you and I had a friend in LA. I don't want to name names, but I used to go there from Second City to rehearse some stuff. You came there with me there once to watch a Super Bowl. So really kind of hoity-toity part of LA, and you couldn't park anywhere. It's really expensive. But his building was right next door to the building where Jack Cassidy had lived. And I knew he had died there. And every time I was there, I was like, always like, I wonder if I can get in. Like, I'd love to go up and find that apartment.
I'm sure you thought that.
But he apparently, he was a drunk, a smoker. He apparently fell asleep in a lounge chair smoking.
Yeah.
Cigarette fell, burned. And he was found halfway between his chair and the door of the apartment. So it leads you to believe that he woke up. I mean, he burned to death alive, I think. Yeah, yeah. Or maybe the smoke got to him first. I don't know. But anyway, there's that. I had made a note to read the IMDb trivia on, I guess maybe Jack Cassidy. I'm going to look up Patrick Cassidy. Maybe I had it on him. But yeah, so I was excited because we're, you know, I've talked a lot about David Cassidy. I'm not a fan, but he seems to come up a lot in my podcast. Let's take a look at the check this out. So Mother Shirley Jones was pregnant with him while filming The Music Man. Nobody knew she was pregnant until the footbridge scene where Robert Preston had his arms around her and Patrick kicked him. So interesting stuff there, right? So Patrick had focused on football and possibly college as a star quarterback of Beverly Hills High School in 1979. So what a typical acting life, right? Yeah. He's a football player for Beverly Hills High. However, when he broke his collarbone early in the season of his senior year, he looked into the drama department and started his career there. So that is Patrick Cassidy. Let's take a look at his credits. 59 acting credits. His first one is a 1981 TV movie, Midnight Offerings. His most recent is a 2016 TV movie called Late Bloomers. So you've got Midnight Offerings and Late Bloomers. I'm going to make this a choose-your-own-adventure.
Okay.
One of those is interesting. One of those is not. Which one do you want to talk about?
Late Bloomers.
Late Bloomers. That's the not interesting one.
Great.
Okay.
The other one then.
But I did make a note. So Late Bloomers, there was really nothing interesting there, or Late Bloomers call, but I did note that I want to talk about the synopsis. Simple. A woman falls for a guy who bullied her in high school. How about that?
Oh.
Could you fall for a guy who bullied you in high school?
Look, I'm just saying, there's some childhood trauma and she's repeating some childhood trauma patterns.
Yeah, I don't know. High
she
school
needs to heal.
I mean, forgiveness is not is definitely a growth opportunity for me anyway, but I don't think someone who I knew as a bully, I could ever fall in love with him.
No.
Because I think that's kind of innate in who you are. But anyway, that's one thing interesting there. But let's talk about his first credit. 1981 TV movie, Midnight Offerings. This one is a gift from God. First of all, it's a Best Synopsis nominee. Let me read you the synopsis. Vivian has magic powers. She doesn't hesitate to save her boyfriend David from failing in school by murdering teachers.
Wow.
However, David has gotten tired of her and is putting his charm on a new girl in school, Robin. Robin discovers that she also has magic powers, and it comes to a mental showdown between the two women over David.
Whoa.
What the fuck is going on?
There's murder for good grades? Did I hear that?
Yeah,
right?
She kills. First of all, any girl who's killing teachers for me because they're failing me, I'm all in on that girl. A, because she's obviously loyal. Also, because I'm shit scared of her.
Right.
If she kills a teacher, better not break up with her.
Dude.
Talk about a girl you have to let down easy. But a great cast. So the star of this is Melissa Sue Anderson. I know you know her. She was the oldest daughter in Little House on the Prairie, the one who went blind. Mary? Is it Mary?
I watched that show, but I was too little to remember the actors' faces or anything.
But no, here's her face. I mean, I feel like, yeah, she was the oldest daughter. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Melissa Sue Anderson, she was, and I don't know why this happens on my podcast, but themes always emerge. Little House comes up a lot today. Little House on the Prairie. I don't know what it is. But anyway, so Melissa Sue Anderson was the oldest daughter. This movie, Midnight Offering, also had Marion Ross. She's Mrs. C from Happy Days, Mrs. Cunningham. It also had Gordon Jump. Gordon Jump is back.
Oh, right.
My Mormon friend who tried to give Dudley wine.
Yes. And then was on the thing, right?
Yeah. Gordon Jump is back. WKRP in Cincinnati. Catherine Damon. She was from a great show called Soap that I used to watch. It also featured Vanna White in her first role. So Vanna White in her first acting role, I don't know if this was before she learned how to turn letters around.
She's turning things over.
Yeah. So, so let's talk about Patrick Cassidy's notable roles before we get into the interesting ones.
Okay.
Notable roles. He did in 1984, he did a two-parter, two episodes of The Love Boat. And these particular episodes had interesting casts. It featured Elkie Summer. Elkie Summer was in The Wrecking Crew with Sharon Tate, by the way. Cloris Leachman, George Kennedy, Pat Harrington Jr. He was Schneider in One Day at a Time. It all comes back. I love it. But also it featured a young Tim Robbins. Tim Robbins
Duke
in The Love
Boat.
Who did?
My mom's cousin.
That's right. The partner with Spelling, right? Yeah. Well, it was an Aaron Spelling show.
Yeah. That's how he started, was writing for them.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Writing, huh? That's interesting. Fast and loose with the term writing.
Yeah.
It's basically, let's take a bunch of fading stars and throw them into a scenario. One's on a cruise because he's looking to find love, and this one's on a cruise because she's sad, and they find each other. Every episode's the fucking same thing. And that's why I'm shocked Tim Robbins in it. He's the only up-and-comer in the whole fucking cast. The rest of them are like just, you know, on their way down. All right, anyway, so 1994, he does Murder, She Wrote. 95, he does The Nanny. 1997, he has an episode of Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. And I was today years old. Today, here's when I realized, oh, is that a play on Lewis and Clark? Is that why they called it Lois and Clark?
Oh.
Right? I don't know. As I was writing it down, it occurred to me, Lewis and Clark? Oh, I wonder if they were trying to be clever.
I get it.
Or Lois and Clark, rather.
Right.
Lois and Clark, Lewis and Clark.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
I get it.
Either way, I didn't watch that show because I have no fucking interest. He did Murphy Brown. Then his 2000s.
Oh, Murphy Brown.
Yeah, and then his 2000s get a little bit better, right? He does Law & Order SVU, whereas Christopher on The Sopranos says the SUV, Law & Order, the SUV. 2003 does According to Jim. He does five episodes of Smallville, Charmed, another Aaron Spelling show, Crossing Jordan, CSI Miami, ER Castle, CSI. So, you know, he's basically a lot of that, a lot of one-offs in TV shows. So not a major career.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad career either. Then there were the notable roles, or as I like to call them, those were the notable roles, but I like to look at the interesting roles. By interesting, I put that in quotes, interesting roles. His second credit is 1981 TV movie called Angel Dusted. Now, I opened this thing. Oh, this is gonna be funny. It's actually not. It's kind of touching. So it seems really heavy.
Is someone like sprinkled by angel dust?
Well, I'll read you. Well, I thought it was gonna be something stupid like that, and it's not. It's actually kind of sounds heavy. So here's the synopsis. Jean Stapleton, who I love. Jean Stapleton was Edith Bunker on All in the Family.
Okay.
Great actress. Jean Stapleton appears with her son, John Putch, in the story of an affluent working wife and mother, whose well-behaved son suddenly falls into the trap of drug abuse. And even the picture looks like harrowing. It's Jean Stapleton all... Yeah. And so anyway, so I'm not going to goof on it, but it did star Jean Stapleton, who I love. She will always be Edith Bunker to me.
She looks like she's behind like a jail... glass or something.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? Like, she's an older woman. But, like, I always thought of Archie Bunker and Edith as old people.
Yeah.
When that show started in 1972, he was considerably younger than Brad Pitt is right now. Carol O'Connor was.
Oh, wow.
She is about Jennifer Aniston's age in that picture.
Oh, wow.
Isn't it funny how aging is? 50s used to seem so old. And then...
Yes. And then Botox.
Well, yeah. But my point is, I mean, still. I mean, Brad Pitt, I mean, I'm sure he's had some work. But Brad Pitt compared to Carol O'Connor.
Yes.
It's just a... Yeah. Anyway, this film also featured Brian Andrews, which I want to talk about. He was the little boy Tommy in the original Halloween. He's the little boy who Jamie Lee Curtis was babysitting in the original Halloween. Later on in Halloween Kills... before Halloween Ends. And Halloween Kills, they had the grown-up version of Tommy played by... Oh, shit. I can't remember. He had a hot career in the John Hughes movies. Little blonde-haired kid from Breakfast Club. I can't remember his damn name. Anyway, it is what it is. But that guy played Tommy as a grown-up. And then Helen Hunt
was...
You mean
like Emilio Estevez?
No. Emilio Estevez. No, he's in 16 Candles here. Now I got to pull up fucking 16 Candles. How do I not remember this kid's name?
Oh.
The little nerdy kid from Breakfast Club, Anthony Michael Hall.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, but now he's kind of buff. But so Tommy, the original Tommy, there's Brian Andrews. He's in this movie. So now, and of course, a young Helen Hunt. Now I'm looking for another interesting credit, and it's his third credit. So now I'm starting to think maybe I find too many things interesting because, like, literally, I haven't even gotten beyond his third credit. But it's a 1981 TV series called Here's Boomer. And I'm like, all right, I'm in. I want to learn about Here's Boomer. I never heard of this TV show. Let me pull up the synopsis. I cannot find it. I will type it. Here's Boomer. Here we go. It's a 1980 TV series. The Adventures of Boomer, a stray dog who travels the country helping those in trouble. Interesting note. Well, it ran 20 episodes, by the way, 1980 to 1981, I guess. Interesting cast. So I started Johnny the dog. He played Boomer. He earned $3,500 a week. Not bad for old Johnny
the dog. He needs to go help those teachers that are being murdered.
My dog doesn't earn shit. But he earned $3,500 a week. It also featured Doris Roberts, famous for a million things. Most recently would be Everybody Loves Raymond. She's Raymond's mom. Todd Bridges was in this. Willis from Dee Wallace. She was the mom in E.T. She was also the mom in Cujo. She was in a movie called The Howling. She had a kind of weird Scream Queen vibe going on. She was Dee Wallace Stone for a while. Then I guess she divorced Stone. I don't know. Margaret Hamilton. She was a Wicked Witch. Ron Silver. It also featured Barney Martin. Barney Martin is a That Guy actor. He was in a million things. Most famous also from Seinfeld. He was Jerry Seinfeld's dad. But he was also in a couple of episodes of 21 Jump Street, including the pilot. So the pilot episode of 21 Jump Street centers around Tom Hansen, played by Johnny Depp, who is a street cop, like a beat cop, uniform cop, like his dad was. He's got a baby face and people don't take him seriously. And his partner is a veteran cop played by Barney Martin. And basically, because Hansen is always like not respected, it gives him a chip on his shoulder. So then it turns out the mayor's got a pet project of this small team of young looking cops who are going to start going into high schools. Tom Hansen goes to work for that. And that's your show, 21 Jump Street, which I was obsessed with as a teenager. But also more actors in this Here's Boomer thing. John Amos, he was the dad in Good Times, but also in Coming to America. He owned McDowell's. The McDonald's wannabe. Dean Butler, who played also in Little House on the Prairie. Dean Butler played Manly. The Melissa Gilbert character married him. Laura Ingalls, she married a guy. It wasn't really named Manly, but she called him Manly.
That's what people would tell me I look like.
Manly?
Melissa Gilbert.
You did. There was a picture of you that your parents had where you're wearing a jean jacket. And you're kind of like holding the collar.
Oh,
1980s, like Napoleon Dynamite's girlfriend took the photo.
It would be the most random times I'd have people stop me and be like, do you know who you look like?
Oh.
It was Melissa Gilbert.
Well, there you go. Hey, not bad. She had a great career. She, you know, she went on. She was, remember in the 80s, as she got older, she was briefly engaged to Rob Lowe. That was a big scandal.
Ooh.
And then she was the president of SAG for a while later on in life.
Oh, I did know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, good career for her, I guess. Michael J. Fox, only his eighth credit was Here's Boomer. He, of course, went on to do Back to the Future, and that may or may not tie into Melora Hardin later. We'll find out. Roseanne Arquette was in this. Roseanne Arquette was in a movie you'd love. A great movie. She's obviously an Arquette, so she's been in a million things. But she was in The Executioner's Song, which was a great TV movie about the serial killer Gary Gilmore. And Gary Gilmore is played by, phenomenally, by young Tommy Lee Jones. And like that's,
well, I'm in.
Yeah, that movie always haunted me. And it ends with his execution. Gary Gilmore gets caught.
Oh.
But anyway, but Roseanne Arquette. Also, she was the subject of a lot of love songs. You know, famous songs are written about Roseanne Arquette. So
you've told me this.
Toto, Roseanne. 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 It's about her. And then also Peter Gabriel's In Your Eyes.
Wow.
That's about her. I'm like, she must be pretty... something pretty special. Like these people writing these songs about her. But anyway, I always like Roseanne Arquette. Tom Bosley was in this. Natalie Schaefer, she's lovey, Mrs. Howell from Gilligan's Island. Matthew Labrateau. Now, Matthew Labrateau played Albert on Little House on the Prairie. It comes up later again.
All right.
Remember Albert? He was like the son, adopted son. Anyway, this is stuff that stays in my head. And then, of course, Rue McClanahan was in Here's Boomer. Now, Rue McClanahan, I have a, you know, I like to make Fanacek about me. Well, and why not? I am Fanacek. When we were at Second City, you probably remember this story. We had I was in a show that has sketch where it's a long story. And it wasn't even a funny sketch, and I wasn't in it, which is probably why it wasn't funny. But the joke was they kept saying the word branch. Remember branch, oh, branch, branch.
And I said palm frond.
Yes, it's just a stupid sketch. But I remember having the idea, wouldn't it be funny if and the joke of the sketch was they say branch, but I think they say something else like wrench or whatever the hell. And I thought, wouldn't it be funny if they say branch and they think it's Blanche, we have Rue McClanahan come out, which is never going to happen in a million years. But I reached out, so I started making calls. I ended up communicating with her agent, who was in Malibu. And he was really responsive. He was like, hey, you know, because I was like, hey, it's from Second City, which has a great reputation. They didn't know it was the Second City Training Center. So I was, you know, don't let the details ruin a good story. So, and they responded back. They said, look, Rue right now lives in New York, but she does travel back and forth. If she happens to come to Los Angeles the next 5 to 6 weeks, we'll be in touch with you. Maybe she'd like to do it. And I was like, how phenomenal would that be for one night I could get Rue McClanahan to come to our theater?
Yes.
And it, of course, never happened, but I have that story. So there you
go.
All right, now we got to move on. All right, because we have a lot to get through today. And so now we're going to talk about another interesting credit, 1983's Off the Wall. Now I'm bringing back the Best Poster Award, okay? Which I've been away from for a while, but Off the Wall, 1983, check out this poster. That's a good poster. I like that poster. Gets me excited.
Yes.
It's a very Fanacek poster.
It is a very Fanacek
poster. One day when I have the Fanacek Museum opened, and it's coming, right?
Yes.
No, but I will have a hall of posters, if you will. One room will be all Yul Brynner posters, and the other one will be my faves. But let's take a look at Off the Wall. So the synopsis is, two young hitchhikers are picked up by a speed-crazed young woman who tears around the countryside. She leaves them to take the blame for her activities, and they find themselves sentenced to 6 months in prison. The girl, feeling bad about what she did to them, resolves to break them out. I don't know. I can't wait to not watch that. But it's got Paul Sorvino. He's Mira Sorvino's dad.
Yeah.
He's Paulie from Goodfellas, right? Yeah. Also features Roseanne Arquette, so she's back. It all comes full circle. And Mickey Gilley. I've met Mickey Gilley. So Mickey Gilley was a famous country star, but, and I could be wrong, your pops are no better than me. I kind of think he's more like a B-level star. Like, I don't think he was ever a major star, but he owned, I used to live in Texas, not far from Pasadena, Texas, and he owned a famous club called Gilley's. That's where Urban Cowboy took place. Gilley's.
Okay.
So it's Urban. And he's in the movie. He's up on stage before, as is Bonnie Raitt and Charlie Daniels. All these people are in Urban Cowboy. I've seen that movie a million times. As a little boy, I used to run around quoting that. Matter of fact, there's a famous scene in it where he yells at Deborah Winger, John Travolta does, where he's like, get me a beer. And my mom would always tell the story how we'd be on the subway in New York and I'd be like 4 years old and I'd yell, get me a beer.
Solid.
It's pretty funny.
Times have not changed.
But this club was so famous in Texas that they literally, I was a part of a daycare center during the summers. My parents worked, so I was in daycare. And this is one of the places they take you to on field trips. And one of the times they took us to Gilley's and on field trips. Now, at that time, it may have changed. At the time, it was the largest club in America. Like, that's how big Gilley's is.
Okay.
And Mickey Gilley was there and came and said hi to all the kids. So there you go.
Oh,
that's Mickey
gosh.
Gilley. Okay, we have to move on. I've got too much to get through. He does a 1990 TV movie called Follow Your Heart. There's two interesting things about Follow Your Heart that I wrote down. Let me see if I can find it here on my app. I've been so good. I'm so diligent about saving all this stuff. But the problem is I save too much stuff. So Follow Your Heart. What did I say? 1990? This is going to be tough. And here we go. TV movie, Follow Your Heart. Two interesting things. The synopsis and an actor named Ted White. And I'll show you why. Let's start with the synopsis. An ex-Marine in search of some defining life direction unexpectedly faces a hurdle when his Jeep breaks down in a sparsely populated Wyoming town. While waiting for parts to repair the vehicle, he takes a temporary job as a rest area attendant and moves on to a ranch run by a one-legged widow with a mentally handicapped son. When an abandoned Vietnamese girl joins the group, the scene is ready for confrontation and tragedy. Wow. So I don't know what's going on. Hold on. A widow who's blind? A one-legged widow, a mentally retarded son, and then a Vietnamese kid comes up. I don't know what's going on there. Anyway, I just remember, I love when I'm reading a synopsis, and I'm not even doing the synopsis anymore. Like, what? What?
Yeah.
So what's the movie going to be like? But here's what caught my eye, because I always look at the cast to find something interesting. There is an actor in it named Ted White, and here's his photo. He's the last actor there.
Oh, so, okay,
so I guess we can surmise that he once played Jason.
Yeah, he had a Jason mask on.
Because his photo, his headshot is of Jason. So I looked it up, and of course he was in Friday the 13th Part 4, the final chapter. It's one of the better ones. This is the one where Tommy enters the series. So Tommy, and I don't remember Tommy's last name. But anyway, there was a character named Tommy in several of the movies in the middle, 4, 5, and 6. He's a young boy, as a teenager, then in his 20s. And he's the protagonist who kills Jason and all those. And when we first meet Tommy, he's played by a very young Corey Feldman. And Corey Feldman is the one that kills Jason. And then at the end, there's like this shot of Corey Feldman where you get the vibe that like, oh, he's going to be Jason now, or he's going to be the new killer now, you know. And it wasn't the final chapter. They lied because they've since made like another 75 of those movies. But also, I know you're not interested, but my audience might be. I've had this conversation with my friends a lot. It's also the best of the franchise for nudity. So if it's nudity you're into, Friday the 13th Part 4, there's even twins in it who get topless. And I'm sorry, I just had to throw that out there. And I had this conversation with my friend Sean recently about that. And he actually, I think he went and rented it just to verify I was correct. And he was like, "You were a kid." Well, when you're a young Fanichek and you don't have the internet and you have you have to find nudity where you can, and I found that the Friday the 13th franchise was great for that. So anyway, so this movie's got some amazing credits though. So let's take a look real fast. I mean, it's got maybe it doesn't. I said that it did, but I don't see anyone nearly in here terribly interesting, so I take that back. However, it did have Ted White, who played Jason, and he later on did a movie called Starman, which may or may not come up later in Fanichek Season 2, because Starman was a movie starring Jeff Bridges that became a TV show.
I bet it does come up later.
I think you'd win that bet. Okay, last one. I got to get away from this. Patrick Cassidy does a 1990 TV movie with a Best Title nominee. It's called Hitler's Daughter. Yeah, I know. It's a story of a man who loves his daughter but hates those Jews, boy. Hitler's Daughter. Let's find this real quick. 1990 TV movie. Here's a synopsis. Hitler's daughter wants to occupy the White House. She might just do it unless the ineffectual Nazi hunters and their latest recruit can figure out who the heck she is. Anyway, I don't know what the hell's going on there. Funny synopsis. Best title nominee. So Patrick Swayze versus Patrick Cassidy. In terms of career, who would you pick? I mean, who do you think fills the role out better? Who do you think has the bigger career? Patrick Swayze or Patrick Cassidy? I think this is a no-brainer.
Patrick Swayze.
Patrick Swayze, yeah. Patrick Cassidy, you are out, sir. But he does win in longevity. He's still alive, whereas Patrick Swayze is not. Okay, we have to talk about Baby Houseman. Baby Houseman, I argue she's probably the star of the movie, played by Jennifer Grey, gets a nose job afterwards, destroys her career. Don't understand it, never will. You know who recently did that? You got to look this up. Not right now because we're talking, but there's been a lot of stuff I've seen on the internet. Zac Efron apparently looks a lot different. His jaw looks different.
It's because he got in some accident.
I don't know. I think
he smashed it.
There's all the he's something weird going on with that guy. There's all these stories that all pop up and they seem to get squashed. There was some weird drug stuff, got squashed. He was seen hanging under a bridge in like the valley that got squashed. I think if we dig deep, I think Zac Efron, I think there's some stuff going on there. I think he'll be like a Tiger Woods where one day there'll be this big reveal that the last 10 years of his life have been a lie and he's, anyway, I get the vibe. So now it's not Baby Houseman anymore. So you don't put Baby Houseman in a corner, but maybe you can put Baby Kellerman in a corner because Baby Kellerman is the name now, played by Melora Hardin. She's Jan Levinson on The Office. She's Michael's boss and later his love interest.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, man. I love her. I love Melora Hardin because that. So, but she's got a great story and I've told it before on the podcast. Her career got derailed. So she was cast as the girlfriend in Back to the Future. This is going to be a huge big break for her. Mm-hmm. And it was her and Eric Stoltz, because Eric Stoltz was originally Marty McFly. And you can still look it up on YouTube. There's clips of Eric Stoltz's interpretation of Marty McFly. And the problem with Eric Stoltz was he played it really serious. No irony. And so like they wanted Michael J. Fox originally anyway. Family Ties folks wouldn't let him out of his contract. They started filming with Eric Stoltz. They decided, even though it's going to cost us, they were like deep in. I think like 8 to 9 weeks in. And they're like, we got to scrap it and we got to start over. But by that time, they were done filming Family Ties for the season. So it kind of worked out. So Michael J. Fox came in and he just had a more comedic take on it. He really played up the fish out of water stuff.
Right.
So the stuff you see on YouTube is Eric Stoltz in the 50s. And he's like, oh, serious. And he's freaked out. Whereas when you see Michael J. Fox, interpretation, he's freaked out, but he's like bumping into stuff, and just it's a funny role. It's a fish out of water thing, whereas Eric Stoltz was a little too serious. So they replace Eric Stoltz with Michael J. Fox. That makes Melora Hardin way too tall to be his girlfriend, because Michael J. Fox is maybe 5'5".
Yeah.
So she gets, and it sucks because Claudia Wells gets the part, right? Now Claudia Wells, she does a fine job, but she can't do the sequel because her mom is dying. So now Back to the Future 2 comes out. Claudia Wells can't do it, which I would have to imagine Melora Hardin would have. So now Melora Hardin would have had two movies, you know. And yeah. She ended up being replaced. Claudia Wells was replaced with Elizabeth Shue. Elizabeth Shue then became the girlfriend.
Right.
And I don't know if the girlfriend was even in the third one. Maybe it was. I don't know. The third one was in the Wild West and all that. Anyway, so we got to talk about Melora Hardin. So like Patrick Cassidy, though, she has a famous father. So her dad is Jerry Hardin. He was born in 1929. He's still alive. He's got 160 acting credits, this guy. So her dad is like the kind of guy that I wish was my dad. Check this out. First, we'll talk about is he does all these iconic TV show appearances. He did The Defenders, Ironside, Gunsmoke, Family, Starsky and Hutch, The Streets of San Francisco, Beretta, Little House on the Prairie.
All right.
WKRP in Cincinnati with Gordon Jump, The Rockford Files, The Incredible Hulk, Bosom Buddies with Tom Hanks and Peter Scolari, who just passed away. Highway to Heaven, Simon and Simon, Remington Steele, Miami Vice, Family Ties with Michael J. Fox. Too many to name. But he also has some really good movie credits, this guy. He did Miracle on 34th Street. So there you go. And that's one of your faves. He did 1941, a Steven Spielberg movie with Belushi and Aykroyd. He did Angel Dusted, so that comes back.
Angel Dusted.
Yeah. Cujo with Dee Wallace. We mentioned that earlier. Pig Trouble Little China, Starman, the TV series. And then Pacific Heights, which is a great movie with Matthew Modine, Melanie Griffith, and the original Batman. What the hell is it? Not Adam West, but the movie. Michael Keaton. Anyway. The Firm and so many others. So, not taking anything away from her, but she was kind of born on third base, right? I mean, she was born into that family. So Melora Hardin, born June 29th, 1967. She has 117 acting credits. The first one is an episode of Police Story in 1976. She was 9 years old, so she was a child actor. Her most recent credits are 6 episodes of A Million Little Things between 2019 and 2022. Ran for 75 episodes. I never saw it. I'm not going to talk about it. I have a lot to get through. But she did Police Story, which I do want to talk about. So Police Story was a great show. It's one of the many shows from the 70s that remind me of my grandmother, because I watched this with my grandmother all the time. So I'm going to pull it up. But one of the directors of it was one of my favorites. It was Michael Mann. So let me pull up Police Story here. Sorry, folks. Police Story. Eventually, I want a producer for this damn thing so they can do this for me. So here's the synopsis. Classic anthology series which details the personal lives of the men and women of the Los Angeles Police Department. The stories range from highly dramatic to extremely funny. Even though there weren't any regulars, Don Meredith and Tony LaBianco were often seen throughout the run of the show as detectives Burt Jameson and Tony Calabrese, respectively. So it was an anthology show about cops. Great show. It ran 97 episodes. Lots of directors. One of the directors was actually Nicholas Colasanto. And that caught my name because Nicholas Colasanto was originally in Cheers. He was Coach. And he died in real life and was replaced by a new character, Woody, which was Woody Harrelson. So that's how Woody Harrelson got his career. And yes, it was coincidental that the character's name was Woody and his name was Woody Harrelson.
That's funny.
Yeah. But he was in the first, like, probably 3 seasons of Cheers and passed away. But 4 of the episodes were written by Michael Mann, one of my favorite directors. Michael Mann, he did 1981's Thief, 1986 Manhunter. So that was the original first movie ever made with Hannibal Lecter. So it was later on, the story was redone as Red Dragon. So it's a prequel to, it becomes before Silence of the Lambs.
Yes.
It was originally done in 1986.
I remember when the book came out.
Yeah, there you go. So 1986 Manhunter. He did the TV series, of course, Crime Stories. So Michael Mann also did Heat 1995. So we were recently at a Halloween party.
Yeah, yes.
Give me what you got! No, give me all you got. Give me all you got! Give me all you got! It's Al Pacino overacting for 2 hours, but a great movie. It's Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, Val Kilmer. The chick who I saw on the airplane that time, she's a little bit nutty. I can't remember her name. Anyway, great, great movie, Heat. He also directed The Insider, Ali, Collateral, produced a TV series, Miami Vice. So anyway, Melora Hardin did a two-part episode in 1976. Let's talk about her notable roles. So 1978, she does The Love Boat. Her episode also featured Ruth Buzzy and Sid Caesar. That's kind of two comedy classics. Ruth Buzzy from, what the hell's the name of that show? It's funny how I know all this stuff and I get in front of a microphone and I can't remember it all. But and then Sid Caesar, who he had a show called Your Show of Shows, which had arguably one of the best comedic writing staffs in history. I think it was like Norman Lear, Woody Allen. Like all these people before they were famous all came out of Your Show of Shows. And Sid Caesar, as an older man, was in Greece. He was the coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Ruth Buzzy, though, was also in that. She did Different Strokes in 1980, Little House on the Prairie in 1981, Magnum P.I. Then she did the TV movie of Little House, Look Back to Yesterday. And that's where Albert, played by Matthew Labrador, who I mentioned earlier, Albert dies. And I remember this clearly. There's like this scene where like Michael Landon's character, Charles Ingalls, I think, but he has to like climb this big hill with Albert and I think ostensibly to bury him. I don't know, but I just remember being young and seeing that and it was pretty sad, but that was Albert. And God, it's a lot of Little House today. She did Iron Eagle in 1986. She did The Rocketeer in 1991. 1992, she has Quantum Leap, Murder, She Wrote, Matlock, Lois and Clark. That comes back. Friends. She did a ton of stuff. Of course, The Office, Blacklist, and then 14 episodes of Transparent. So she's had a great career. I mean, she's still rocking and rolling. Let's look at the interesting stuff, though. Like the stuff that she wishes was probably underneath the rug or stuff that I find interesting. So the first thing we're going to look at is something called What Are Friends For? So this was, oh boy, it's going to take me forever to find it now. So let me just pull up Melora Hardin. But this was an after school special. Did you ever watch after school specials? Or was it around when you were a kid?
Yeah, they were.
Do you remember any of them or no?
I don't know. I don't know if I remember any specifically. Didn't they have like messages?
Yeah, they were all. I mean, they were all very special episodes. They were all meant to, that's why they were after school specials, of course. Right. Well, she did one, let me pull it up here, called What Are Friends For? It ran March 19th, 1980. Two 12-year-old girls going through a divorce make a pact never to divorce their friendship.
Oh.
Yeah. I thought that was cute. It starred Melora Hardin as one of the friends. The other friend was Dana Hill. Dana Hill, interestingly enough, was the very first. Oh, no. She was the second Audrey. So in the vacation movies, National Lampoon's Vacation, one of the running jokes is every movie, the kids are different. And sometimes their ages swap. Like she was it started off where like he's older than her. Then once she's older than him and it's a whole, and they always kind of tongue in cheek reference it in the movies. Well, Dana Hill was the second Arby in European Vacation and she always looked a little off. And I hate to say that. I mean, I'm not trying to be a joke, but like, or I'm not trying to be funny, but like in the movie, she had like an eating disorder, but you could tell like she physically was just a little off.
Okay.
She died really young. She died at 32 years old, and I'll read it. Ugh. Because of her stunted growth, she appeared to be about 12 or 13 years old, even later in life. She was cast in many adolescent roles well into her 20s because as an adult, she was not subject to the strict labor rules and all that stuff. So she had something, and she passed away very young at 32. Ugh. And again, when you watch the movie, she's great in it, but it does appear like something's off. I remember even as a kid thinking something's wrong. But this movie, this after school special, What Are Friends For, was directed by Stephen Gyllenhaal. Guess who his kids are?
No. Jake Gyllenhaal.
And Maggie Gyllenhaal. Yeah, not those other Gyllenhaals that you were probably thinking of. Those two Gyllenhaals, yes. So again, not taking anything away from the Gyllenhaals, but born on third base when your dad's out there directing after school specials.
Yeah.
Anyway, Papa Was a Preacher. She does this in 1985. Only reason I bring that up, it co-starred Brandon Douglas, who I talked about in my last episode. Brandon Douglas was the fake Cameron. He played Cameron Fry in the TV version of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. We have to talk about this. So in 1986, she does Soul Man. Have you ever seen Soul Man?
No.
This is not good.
I mean, I know. I'm a soul man.
Right. We're going to pull this up. So Soul Man came out in 1986. It stars C. Thomas Howell. C. Thomas Howell, probably most famous as Pony Boy. He was Pony Boy in The Outsiders. And he really didn't do shit after that. Now, that movie has one. It's my next episode of Fan Check is about Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and that movie has maybe one of the best casts in history in the sense of all these people who are unknown. So Fast Times at Ridgemont High has like an unknown, Nicolas Cage. He wasn't even Nicolas Cage. It was Nicolas Coppola. Unknown Sean Penn. Unknown Forest Whitaker. Unknown John Reinhold. Unknown Jennifer Jason Leigh. I mean, like it's an amazing cast of people who went on to do stuff. Well, The Outsiders is similar. Think about The Outsiders. An unknown Swayze. Unknown Rob Lowe, unknown Tom Cruise, unknown Ralph Macchio, Diane Lane, unknown, all these people. So and the star of the movie is C. Thomas Howell. And I'll never forget, like in the 90s, maybe late 90s, the girl I just mentioned, what the hell was her name? Diane Lane. Diane Lane and now becomes a star. And is there something going on behind me? Because you keep looking behind me. We good? Okay. Diane Lane is hosting SNL, and she's reading her, the joke is she's doing the monologue, and she's reading her diary from when she was making The Outsiders. And she's like, yeah, and I work with Tom Cruise today, and he's okay. And I've had Emilio Estevez, and he's fine, and Rob Lowe, and this guy named Patrick something. But I think the real star is going to be this guy I work with, C. Thomas Howell. Like, he's going to be, the joke is, like, out of all these people, he's the only guy to do anything. Like, he had no career after this. So anyway, so Soul Man... I'm going to show you pictures, but this is brutal. This would never fly today. To achieve his dream of attending Harvard, a pampered teen poses as a young black man to receive a full scholarship. And I got to show you. I mean, this is bad. I mean, it's let me show you. So this is what C. Thomas Howell looks like. That's he's a white guy. I mean, that's C. Thomas Howell.
Yeah.
Now, let me show you pictures of him once he goes into full-on costume. There's one. That's him in the background. Look at the hair. So he's got hair. He's got the whole... They do brown thing. It's very bizarre looking.
Yeah.
It's just brutal. So basically, he does blackface the whole movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't know how that flew. The other star of the movie was Ray Dawn Chong. She's the daughter of Tommy Chong. I met Tommy Chong once. And then they fell in love and got married and then later divorced in the movie. See, Thomas Howell and Ray Dawn Chong did. Okay. It also featured James Earl Jones, Leslie Nielsen, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Ron Reagan, the son of Ronald Reagan. He in the 80s, like early 80s, he hosted SNL one time too. When Lauren was gone and the show was kind of not doing so well. I had something here though about, interesting trivia that I read. So C. Thomas Howell was in this movie. Obviously it was not a good move for him and his career kind of went away after this, but someone else up for it who passed on it was Tim Robbins. Right. What makes me laugh about that, he dodged the bullet, but he opted to do Howard the Duck instead of this movie. And I'm like, I don't know, those are both pretty crappy. Howard the Duck featured a sex scene between a duck and Leah Thompson. This is about a guy in blackface. I don't know which one is the worst one, but Tim Robbins, I guess he made the redder choice. But Tim Robbins was almost in blackface, which would have fucked up his career, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so then Melora Hart in 1989, she does a movie called Big Man on Campus. It's like a modern day Notre Dame, Nostradamus, right? The Hunchback, right? But the only reason I pulled this up is look at the poster for it and read that.
Nostradamus.
I mean, you Nosferatu. Know, no, Notre Dame, Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah.
But look at the one line. Look at the tagline from the movie.
Guess who's back?
Because of his back. He's got a hunchback.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty stupid. And that's all it is. So, all right. So, we're almost wrapping her up. She does a 1992 episode of a show called Man and Machine. And it's worth talking about because there's a funny thing in the picture for this one, too. So, Man and Machine. Let's take a look. All right. It's a 1992 TV series. In the near future, cop Bobby Mann, M-A-N-N, Bobby Mann is teamed with a voluptuous robot partner, Sergeant Eve Edison.
Wow.
He's a brash, wisecracking maverick. She's serious, naive, by the book, and tends to take things literally. Maybe because she's a fucking robot. I don't know. In this hour-long series, the two detectives learn from each other while solving a variety of crimes. Now, here's what I thought was funny about this. Obviously, it's a shit show. It didn't last too long. But look at the box. Man and Machine. This is a DVD box. It's a 5-DVD set. Now, this thing lasted 9 episodes. So what the fuck are they putting on to 9 DVDs or 5 DVDs?
5 DVDs.
The Sopranos doesn't even come on 5 DVDs. It just makes me laugh. So Man and Machine is a 5 DVD set. It only ran 9 episodes, so I don't know what's on there. But it had some fun actors in it. So it had Christine Belford. She later on did Banachek. She also did 90210. Kristen Davis before Sex and the City. I used to have a friend in Hollywood. And he was way into Sex and the City, and I was not. You probably know the friend I'm referring to.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him asking me, like, which one of those four would I want to date? And I don't know the show. I don't know the characters. So I just thought, well, I think she's the most attractive. I picked Kristen Davis as being the most attractive. And he goes, that says so much about you. And I remember thinking, you didn't ask me about their personality. I thought he was just talking. So apparently the characters are pain in the ass. I don't know. But he's like, that says so much about you. And I was like, look, man, I thought I was just basing it off their looks. Also, John Hawks. He's that guy. He's been in a million things, man. John Hawks, one of those guys, everyone knows his face. He was in The Perfect Storm. He was Kenny Powers' brother in Eastbound and Down.
Oh,
one of the funniest shows in television history, Eastbound and Down. Tobin Bell was in this. He was the bad guy in Saw. Curtis Armstrong was in it. He was Booger from Revenge of the Nerds. Booger. Anyway, so last one, I promise, because this is going to come up again. So in 1990, she does a movie called Lambada. Do you remember Lambada?
No.
Okay.
It sounds familiar.
There were three movies around this time, between 88 and like 90. And I remember one of them was called Lambada. One was called The Forbidden Dance. And one was called Salsa. And now I'm young, and my horrible... lack of knowledge about sex, which arguably isn't much better now. But I remember really, because like, they called it The Forbidden Dance. I kind of took that literally.
Right.
I remember thinking like, oh, this this dance or seeing this dance must really make you sexual. Like that must like there may be, you know, I just maybe buying into the marketing campaign of this. I was 12. I don't know. But anyway, she was in Lambada, which makes sense because then she was in Dirty Dancing.
Did you watch it? Were you like, I'm going to watch this and be all sexual?
I have never seen it. Well, it was forbidden. I couldn't. But I remember it was in my neighborhood movie. I lived in the Bronx near a movie theater called The Dale, which, oh, it's beautiful. One of those old, old movie theaters, like with the ticket box office outside. It's just like we have here.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. And they but they didn't fix it up. It became like a furniture store. And oh, it's just, that's sad. The Dale. I saw so many movies at The Dale. But anyway, yeah. So she was in Lambada, but that comes back. Lambada, The Forbidden Dance, and Salsa all came around the same time. So that is Melora Hardin. So if we have to look at career-wise, Melora Hardin versus Jennifer Grey. This one's interesting. Jennifer Grey, she's done some iconic projects. The biggest ones being, of course, Dirty Dancing, which I think is timeless. She was in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and she knocked it out of the park in that. Red Dawn, also to some people, not me, but to some people, an iconic film. But then you have Melora Hardin, who's been around for years and years and years and years. She did The Office. I don't know, who you taking? Whose career? Who's got the better career? Who do you like as Baby Houseman or Baby Kellerman?
I mean, I gotta go Jennifer Grey, just because Dirty Dancing was just such like, just such a seminal movie in my younger years.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. Well, I'm gonna take Melora Hardin then, just to be a contrarian. We have a lot to get through. Ready? All right.
You've said that like 17 times.
I get tired doing this podcast. It's so much information. All right, so there is no Jake Houseman, so we're not going to talk about Jerry Orbach. So we're going to go to Max Kellerman. Now, Max Kellerman in the movie, he owns the resort. He's played by Jack Weston. Jack Weston is a journeyman. Everyone knows his face. He passed away in 1996 at 71 years old. He had 107 acting credits. He did tons of classic TV in the 50s and 60s, all that standard stuff. A movie started to hit for him in the mid-60s. He did two Steve McQueen movies. He did The Cincinnati Kid. He also did The Thomas Crown Affair, both of which are best poster nominees, great posters. The 70s and 80s. He starts to do a ton of movies again. So Ishtar in 87, Dirty Dancing in 87, Short Circuit 2 in 1988 is his last acting credit, and he's done, and he died in 1996. Now, TV show version is McLean Stevenson, also died in 1996. He was younger, though. He was 68. He was a bigger star. He's most famous for one of the greatest shows of all time, MASH, which we're gonna touch on. So McLean Stevenson, though, only had 33 acting credits. Okay, so the first one is A Sign of the Times. It's a short film from 1963. The last one is something called Tales of the City. It's a miniseries from 1993. So we'll talk about Tales of the City because there's really no info on Sign of the Times. So Tales of the City was a miniseries from 1993. We'll skip the synopsis, but it had a lot of stars in it. Olympia Dukakis, Donald Moffat, Chloe Webb. She was Danny DeVito's girlfriend in Twins. My very first date was Twins. And I saw it at the Dale. Oh, gosh. So Twins with a girl named, forget the name, but I went on a date with her to see Twins at the Dale, and to this day, love that movie. The date wasn't so great, but the movie was pretty awesome. And Chloe Webb played, it's Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger as twins. Still love that movie. But anyway, Chloe Webb played Danny DeVito's love interest. Laura Linney was in this. Parker Posey, Sir Ian McKellen, Robert Downey Sr. He's an actor, writer, director. Ginny Garofalo, Don DeVello. Don DeVello's famous. He had a character at SNL called Father Guido Sarducci, and he was like a smoker, and he's a Father Guido Sarducci, and he'd be on Weekend Update all the time. In real life, Don DeVello was also a writer for SNL. He was writing partners with a lot of people, including Belushi. So when John Belushi died, he was actually working on a project with Don DeVello called The Noble Rot. And I guess it's a real thing in wine country. There's like, again, I haven't read this in 20 plus years, but I guess there's a thing that can happen to certain grapes that's actually a bad thing. It's a rot. But this particular bug, whatever it is, makes the wine taste good. So they call it the noble rot.
Got it.
And so Belushi was writing, him and Don DeVello, who played Father Guido Sarducci, they were writing a screenplay called The Noble Rot, and that's but Belushi died. And I don't think the movie was ever made. Other notable roles, though, for McLean Stevenson. He did an episode of That Girl in 1969, famous show starring Marlo Thomas. She went on to marry Phil, not Dr. Phil. Who's the other guy? The Oprah guy. Not Oprah Winfrey, but the other fellow who had a show like that. Oh, God, I can't remember his name. Doesn't matter. Marlo Thomas, That Girl. 10 episodes of the Tim Conway Comedy Hour, 1970 sketch comedy show, ran for 14 episodes. You were a big Tim Conway. You like Carol Burnett, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I watched some of the original Carol Burnett show, and she had a second one. She had a new one. It was like the new Carol Burnett show. I watched that one.
That didn't do too well.
It should have. It was great.
Richard Dent was in
that one. Richard Kind.
Richard Kind. That's it. Oh my God. Richard Dent played for the Bears.
Yeah. Richard Kind.
Yeah. He's still he did a TV show that didn't last long. He's done a ton of stuff, but that didn't last long with Clooney, and they're still lifelong friends. And a few years ago, George Clooney tells this great story where he invited like 7 of his best friends, or maybe it's 13 of them, but some number like that. We had them all come over for a formal dinner at his home, and he gave
Ocean's 13.
And each one of them, he had an envelope waiting for them, and each one of them he gave $1 million to, because they were all people who, like, when he was up and come slept on their couch, or and Richard Kind was one of them. Richard Kind, to this day, they're really good friends. Yeah.
But yeah, he's so funny.
A funny story. So, this has nothing to do with any of this, but George Clooney tells a funny story. So, he's very good friends with Richard Kind, like I said. And I guess Clooney likes to play a lot of pranks.
Yes.
And so, what Clooney did one time is he was driving down the street and someone had the trash on the sidewalk and there was a painting in the trash. So, he grabbed it and he gave it to Richard Kind as a gift. Right, so it's amazing. It's this artist.
Yeah.
And so Richard Kind, feeling bad, put it up on his wall. And anytime Richard Kind would have guests over, Clooney would hold them first and say, because the picture was awful. Richard Kind didn't like it, but it was a gift. But he'd always make sure anyone was going to Richard Kind's house, tell him how much you love that painting. Make sure you comment on the painting.
Wow.
So for years, this garbage painting that was up on his wall that he didn't like, people would come up like, Richard, that's gorgeous. I mean.
Wow.
And it was like years later that he found out that Clooney found it in the garbage. It was basically paying people to say how much they liked it. And
that is a long game.
It is a long game. But I thought that was kind of cool that he had these people come over, and as a thank you, he each gave him $1 million in cash.
Yeah.
Which I hope they didn't have to tell the government about.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Tim Conway, I didn't know Tim Conway had a comedy hour. It ran 14 episodes in 1970. Then McLean Stevenson did 50 episodes of The Doris Day Show from 1968 to 1973. That show ran 28 episodes. McLean Stevenson was in 50 of them. Now he does MASH. So MASH is a big deal. So MASH is arguably, of movies that were made into TV shows, the best it's ever been.
Yes.
It was directed by Robert Altman. The movie had a lot of big stars in it, became a TV show that kind of surpassed the movie for sure. The show ran 1972 to 1983. It's really a lot of stuff to talk about McLean Stevenson because it really kind of took hold of America. McLean Stevenson was one of the leads in it for the first 3 seasons. So he played Lieutenant Colonel Henry Blake. He was on the first 3 seasons. The season 3 finale, 2 of the characters are leaving the show. So he and Trapper John, who was played by Wayne Rogers, who I talked about in my last episode, because as you know, I was in a sketch comedy group with Laura Rogers.
Yes.
His daughter. And she was really kind to me. And I would always kind of fanboy out around her a bit. So every time I would talk to her, I'd always try to weave it into the conversation. Like, hey, Laura, how you doing? Da, da, da. So MASH, huh? Like Trapper John. That's kind of neat. And I was saying this on my last podcast. One thing that always stuck with me is she talked about her dad with a lot of warmth. I remember thinking, oh, she really loves her dad. It was kind of nice.
Aww.
I guess he was a good dad. And she,
yeah.
She talked about how handsome he was and all that stuff. But,
that's great.
And I just felt bad because every time I spoke to her, I'd weave it in eventually.
You were like, also.
So, when are we getting together with Wayne? You know, because I thought that was so cool. And I don't think anyone else knew. Like, that's who her dad was.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's amazing. Your dad was Trapper John. Anyway, so the season 3 finale, the character of Henry Blake, played by McLean Stevenson, and Trapper John, played by Wayne Rogers, are leaving the show. Henry Blake's character is being discharged from the army. As he's leaving, his plane is shot down and he dies. And everyone was pissed. It was such a big deal that they actually didn't show that the last page of the script to any of the actors.
Oh, wow.
Except for Alan Alda. Alan Alda playing Hawkeye is the only one who knows that McLean Stevenson's character is about to die. And it was shocking. People were writing in. I mean, this was a big, big deal. Interestingly, Wayne Rogers was leaving because he was angry. So Wayne Rogers left MASH because he felt like his character ended up just really kind of evolving into a sidekick for Hawkeye, played by Alan Alda. So he left the show and they tried to sue him. It turns out they couldn't sue him because he turns out he had never actually even signed his contract.
I love that.
And the reason he didn't sign his contract, this tells you about Wayne Rogers. He wouldn't sign his contract when he got MASH because there was a clause in it about, there's a morality clause in it. And he goes, I won't sign one unless you guys sign one.
Oh, that's
and
funny.
They didn't, so he didn't. So when he left the show, they tried to sue him. He's like, you can't sue me. I never signed a contract. So
wow.
That's that. But McLean Stevenson left to pursue a rinky-dink movie career, which we'll find out. But they killed him off. And so it was a huge deal. I mean, this was one of those. I mean, you got to remember how popular MASH was. When that show ended, that finale for years was the most watched thing in American television history.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a big deal. So, but here's what's funny about that. So his character gets killed off. America is in shock. The next day, he appears on Cher's variety show. So Cher had a variety show called Cher. It ran from 1975 to 1976. This was her solo variety show after she split up with Sonny Bono. So she had Sonny Cher for years. This one only ran 29 episodes. But the next day, McLean Stevenson appeared on Cher. So as Henry Blake. So the show opens up, Cher's show opens up with Henry Blake paddling a rowboat or a raft or something, screaming, I'm okay! I'm okay. Wow. Yeah. Wow. And it was like a big, yeah. So, I mean, Cher was kind of gambling on the fact that that would be a big deal.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Cause you know, it just aired the night before.
Yeah.
So anyway, so he left to pursue his own show later on, 1976. It was called the McLean Stevenson Show. We'll pull it up here. I'm going to take a quick break. Okay, so again, he's got his own show, the McLean Stevenson Show. It ran from 76 to 77, 12 episodes. So don't quit the hit, folks. So he left MASH, and his show that he gets runs 12 episodes. Here's the synopsis. Mac and Peggy Ferguson face the opposite of an empty nest in small-town Ohio when their two grown children and two grandchildren move in. Son Chris is returning to school while Janet is divorcing. Joining them is Peggy's mother. That sounds awful. So, yeah, so there you go. So it runs 12 episodes, gets canceled. 1979, 3 years later, he gets his own show again. This one I do know of. It was called Hello Larry. It was a spinoff of Different Strokes. So, and I remember clearly, yeah, he plays like a TV show host, something to that effect. Let me pull up Hello Larry. Where is Hello Larry? I had all this pulled up, but I saved so many things on IMDb that it can only hold so much information. So Hello Larry, Larry Alder is a 44-year-old divorcee in Portland, Oregon, raising his two teenage daughters and hosting a call-in psychology radio show, right? Ooh. Before Dr. Okay. Frasier Crane. It's also in the Pacific Northwest. That's kind of funny. Radio psychology show, Pacific Northwest. Anyway, that's Hello Larry, but I'm gonna show you a picture because I remember the show. I particularly remember this Different Strokes episodes, you know, which kind of served as the pilot. But I remember that the show had a girl that I always thought was kind of cute. It's not a great picture of her, but see the blonde right there sitting down?
Yes.
I always thought she was kind of cute. And so when I was doing the research for this, I was like, I wonder who that was. You don't recognize her, do you?
Oh my, well, it was, I don't know.
Well, my point is, I'm going to show you who she is now.
Is it Jan Levinson?
It's Kim Richards from the Beverly Hills.
Oh my God, and she's straight crazy.
Right, but I would never...
Wow.
So I know
you
her
had a
sister.
Crush on Kim Richards.
I guess I did. Kyle Richards was in the original Halloween. I didn't know her sister was also an actor. So her sister was on this show. But anyway, I thought
so
I'd show you
funny.
That. So for anyone who doesn't know, Kim Richards, I didn't see these episodes, but she's in the Beverly Hills Housewives or Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Yes.
She was off the show before I saw some of that with you.
Yes.
But her reputation is of being a psycho, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
So that's McLean Stevenson. However,
she's not psycho. She's just a little mentally unstable.
They're all nuts. That show is awful. I mean, I watch it, but it's awful. One more credit I got to mention. In 1987, McLean Stevenson does a 1987 episode of The Golden Girls. And basically, the story of this one is Dorothy goes on a date with her ex-husband. Her ex-husband is Stan Zbornak, right? She's Dorothy's Zbornak. He's Stan Zbornak. But she goes on a date with his brother, played by McLean Stevenson. So McLean Stevenson was a big star. He really was. And then just kind of faded off. He left MASH and just kind of never really hit another hit show again.
Yeah.
We are running along. So let's take a look. So just one interesting credit for him, because I always look at the notable credits, I look at the interesting ones. He really didn't have too many bad credits. He only had like 33 acting credits. They're all pretty solid. But I did want to make note, he did a 1971 movie called The Christian Licorice Store, which I talked about in like way deep in season one.
The Christian Licorice?
Yeah, it's just a callback to a season one episode of Fanacek. So when you look at Jack Weston versus McLean Stevenson, I don't know. I'm going with McLean Stevenson. I mean, anyone who can be on an episode of a TV show that captures the heart of America, when your character's death gets America upset, I think that's about as good as you can get for an actor. I'm going with McLean Stevenson on that one. Do you want to weigh in?
I'll agree with you.
Fair enough. Good choice. Last character. Okay.
All right.
Cynthia Rhodes, right? So Penny Johnson in the movie, she's the blonde dancing partner for Patrick Swayze's character.
Yes, who has the abortion.
She has an abortion.
Yes.
She was played by Cynthia Rhodes. Now in the show, she's changed to Penny Rivera. I'm guessing because they hired a Mexican actress to play her. So she's played by Constance Marie. A quick once over on the movie version, right? So Cynthia Rhodes, she was, just so you know who that actor was, she was a singer, dancer, actor. She actually began her career in Nashville at Opryland. She was a singer and dancer in the 70s. She was married for a long time, for like almost 30 years, to Richard Marx, you know, the singer Richard Marx?
Kind of.
Okay, anyway. Big deal in the 80s. She only has 15 acting credits and a lot of his dance stuff. She was in the Toto video for Rosanna. Rosanna!
Oh, that's funny.
She was in that video. It all comes full circle on Fanacek. She was in Flashdance, another dancing movie starring, who the hell was in that? It was Jennifer Beals, I think. Staying Alive, another dancing movie. That's a sequel.
I loved Staying Alive.
Staying Alive sucked.
Oh, well, I loved John Travolta.
Saturday Night Fever is amazing.
Yeah.
Staying Alive was a sequel.
Yeah.
Shit show directed by who? Do you remember?
No.
Famously directed by Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, that's right.
And he's in it. So I remember this as a kid. So we had a VCR as a kid. To show you how my parents are deadbeats that they are. I'll never forget, when we first got VCR, they had the choice of VHS or beta. They wisely chose beta. Well done. And it was, so we had a beta machine, right? Until about 4 years after beta was done. So right. It was awful. And I remember our remote control was connected by a wire. It's like, that's how old school.
Wow.
This was a big deal.
A wired remote.
Mm-hmm. And I remember what you would do is you'd watch Staying Alive, and there's a scene where he's walking in, because now the character of Tony Moreno? Anyway.
I just watched it for Tony Travolta. I don't remember.
But the character of Tony is now working in Manhattan trying to pursue a Broadway career. There's a scene where he's walking down like Fifth Avenue or something, a crowd of people. We've seen that shot a million times.
Right.
And if you pause it, Sylvester Stallone's behind him. Or they bump into each other. It's a whole thing. I think it's a bump in. I think it's one of those like bump ins.
Yes.
And I remember my parents like pausing to show me that it's Sylvester Stallone. And,
that's so funny.
I'm thinking like, good choice with the beta. Dumbasses. Anyway, so that's that. So she did that. She did Fantasy Island. She did Dirty Dancing, of course. She retired to be a full-time mom. So Cynthia Rhodes kind of left the career. Yeah. And that's Cynthia Rhodes. Now, her counterpart, Constance Marie, let's talk about her. Born September 9th of 1965. She's of Mexican descent. Most famous for George Lopez. She played George Lopez's wife for all those years. She's got 51 acting credits. Let's take a look at them. Her first, also a music video. Her first acting credit is in some David Bowie music video, but she was uncredited. So let's take a look at her first credited role. That was in 1988 movie, Salsa.
Oh, right.
Yes. So I was able to find, there's a connection.
That is forbidden.
That was so they were all about.
They're all about forbidden.
They were all about the lambada. Right, the lambada was the forbidden dance,
right.
And I guess she did it to salsa music.
Okay,
so one was called lambada, one was called the forbidden dance, one was called salsa, but they were all variations of the same theme. All I know is if you did that dance, someone was getting pregnant. I'm
feeling very sexual.
Yeah, like to me, like because again, I was 12 years old, I didn't have a really good grasp on sex yet, and I remember thinking it's like it must be like that Spanish Fly I've heard about. Like if people are exposed to this dance, whether participating in it or just watching it. People are fucking.
Just like taking E. Like basically. Like
exactly.
Is that. Yes.
Exactly. So her most recent. So that was it. So she was in the movie Salsa, which isn't really worth talking about. I looked it up. There's really nothing interesting there.
It's unfortunate.
Her most recent credit is 16 episodes of a TV series called Undone. It's an Amazon animated show, which I've never seen. But it's got a kind of a neat cast. It includes Bob Odenkirk from Better Call Saul,
right.
Second City,
yes.
Gene Triplehorn, John Corbett, and Brad Hall, also from Second City. So Brad Hall, interesting career. He and his girlfriend were at Second City like in the 80s. They both got plucked out of there to be on this new version of SNL because the original cast all left, Lorne Michaels all left. And him, Brad Hall, his girlfriend was Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Oh, nice.
They later got married and are still married. They've been married for like 45 years, some crazy many years. So Brad Hall, she and Brad Hall were both on SNL together. He did Weekend Update while he was there. His career obviously didn't take off the way hers did. But anyway, that's Brad Hall. So he was in this thing. Her notable roles, so Constance Marie, she did a 1991 episode of Jake and the Fat Man. Also, she did, in 97, she did an episode of Spin City. She did the movie Selena. 2001, she did Ally McBeal. She also did That 70s Show. Then she hits on the George Lopez Show, which lasted 120 episodes. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't know all the story about this, but this was
that
basically...
That show was huge.
It was all Sandra Bullock, too. And not to knock George Lopez, but I don't think he in his stand-up career, he wasn't like knocking down Hollywood's door. I don't think he was like next in line for TV show. Someone put the bug in Sandra Bullock's ear that, hey, you know, the Hispanic community is growing and there's really no representation for them on TV. And she went to a comedy club. She saw George Lopez and bada bing, bada boom, she produced that show.
So, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's all Sandra Bullock, yeah.
That's wild.
I guess I'd have to look it up. That's how the story goes. But yeah,
wow.
So Sandra Bullock's responsible for that. Then after that, she has CSI. What else? She had four episodes from between 2019 and 2020 of Alexa and Katie. Which I know well.
Solid. We do.
Yeah,
I know
it well.
You know better than I do.
I do. It's a Netflix show that my daughters both watch. I'm actually rewatching with my younger daughter right now. It's actually, as far as tween shows go, this is a good one. It's actually well written. It features as Alexa's mom, me and I've got a recurring I have a recurring guest on the show, Michael Scott. Last time he was on my last episode, he was Billy Mack. But he and I often joke that Tiffany Amber Thiessen is one of the goats. She's one of the greatest of all time. Like Kelly Kapowski for a young boy was a big deal. Anyway, so she's on the show, but I know Alexa and Katie really well. Now let's take a look at Constance Marie's interesting role. So in 1992, she does an episode of a TV show called The Hat Squad. And beyond having a stupid title, it ties into something else. Let me just see if I even have The Hat Squad pulled up. Gosh, I am not on my game. So The Hat Squad. Hopefully there's not too many of them. That was a joke, by the way. So here's the synopsis of The Hat Squad. Again, 1992 TV show. A cop and his wife adopt three young boys whose parents were cops who were A cop and his wife adopted a young boy whose parents were cops and or killed in the line of duty. Okay. The three boys became the Hat Squad, part of the police department that tries to track down violent offenders while still wanting to avenge their parents' death. So, I don't know. I feel like not much there. Stupid title. But it featured James Tolkien, who actually I made a joke about him earlier today with you. James Tolkien, he's probably had a long career, but I don't care because I know him from two things. He's bald. He's famously bald. He's famously guy who sent Maverick and Goose to, yes, I have to send you to Top Gun with his cigar and all that. Yeah. He was also the principal in Melora Hardin, what would have been one of her big movies, Back to the Future.
Oh.
Yes. But he's famous for those roles. I mean, he's just always going to be that dude. The dude from Top Gun, the dude from Back to the Future. Anyway, so that's that. So then, though, ties into something else. 1993, she does an episode of a show called Cobra. So let's take a look at Cobra. Now, you can tell it's going to be bad. Why? Because it's called Cobra. I can't imagine anything good coming from it. So 1993, that's different. Because there's also this Stallone movie called Cobra, which is a shit show. Here's the synopsis. When the traditional judicial system fails, there is an alternative, a special government agency that focuses on the victims. So that is Cobra. And here's why they tie them both in. They're both shows that didn't last long. Hat Squad lasted 14 episodes. Cobra lasted 22 episodes. There's really not any big stars in them. But James Tolkien was in this one too. So James Tolkien is back. That's why I tied him in. Nice. So James Tolkien did the Hat Squad. He also did Cobra. And he will always be that dude from that. Anyway, so there you go. So Cynthia Rhodes, we talked about her career. Constance Marie, who do you have?
I know I just keep picking the people from the movie, but the movie was just such a big deal. So I think I got to go with that one.
I'm going with Constance Marie because she worked with James Tolkien. There you go.
There you go.
There you go. So I'm taking her. So quick recap. Swayze versus Cassidy. I think we both agree Swayze. Jennifer Grey versus Melora Hardin. You took Jennifer Grey. I took Melora Hardin. Jack Weston versus McLean Stevenson. I'm taking McLean Stevenson. Did you weigh in on that one?
I just agreed.
Okay, fair enough. And then Constance Marie. You take Cynthia Rhodes. I take Constance Marie.
Yeah.
So let's give out some awards.
Okay.
The Damn, I Didn't Have Anything Better to Do award. There's none to give out. So I'm bummed. So one of the, I think one of the worst things you can do as an actor is be in the movie, right, and then also be in the TV show. Mm. That shows a lack of having some stuff going on, right? Yeah. The career's not doing well. Ferris Bueller didn't have any. This one doesn't have any either. But I've got some episodes coming up that have a lot of them. So there is no award for the Damn, But I Didn't Have Anything Better to Do award. Best casting choice of the TV show, though. If you had to pick one, you have Patrick Cassidy, Melora Hardin, McLean Stevenson, Constance Marie. Any weigh-in on who, best casting? Because I have an opinion.
I mean, it's not like I saw it.
You don't have an opinion on a show you've never seen? Well, I'm going to give you mine.
And most of these actors are like new to me, so I'm just kind of having to kind of like guess. I don't know. Maybe the girl who played Penny.
Okay, Constance Marie. I'm going with McLean Stevenson because that was a get. Like, he was a star. Like, this show's coming out. I'm like, that's a good get. They got McLean Stevenson.
Got it.
I mean, he was a fading star, but he was a big name. I also think they got lucky with Melora Hardin because she went on to do something. What else here? So that's best casting. Worst casting. I don't know. I think worst casting isn't an actor. I think the worst casting is just the idea of changing all the characters.
Yes, that's what I was, so I was stupid. Actually going to say that.
Should this have even been attempted? You have the movie Dirty Dancing. It's an iconic film. Does it be attempted?
No, that's just Hollywood being like, well, let's try to ride this wave a little bit longer. And just realizing that the wave is like, it's just, there's not a wave.
Gotcha. So you have Dirty Dancing, right? Iconic 80s dancing movie. They made it to a TV show. Would you make this into a show? Or how about Footloose? Which one's a better show? Do you do Footloose or this? Footloose never made it into a TV. I'm just an 80s dancing movie.
Oh, Footloose would be a better show.
Right? Teenagers? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because you could get in and out of trouble. You could have stuff between like the law and that, you know, the church and that, like all that kind of rules and all the things. Whereas I think, just like you said, like it was like with Dirty Dancing, it's like at the end of the summer, what do you do? Just repeat it. You have someone come back.
Right.
They keep having the time of their lives every fucking summer.
That's a good point. Whereas with Footloose, you just keep them in high school, then they can just go to you know, college, whatever, city college there in small town USA, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Exactly.
Could this be done today? When you think of the streaming services, Netflix, could this be like a, you know, 10 episodes on Netflix? Could it be a Hulu thing? Could it be HBO Max, Apple TV? I mean, could they, with Prestige Television, could they do this now, Dirty Dancing?
I think you could do a limited run series. Like you said, like a 10 episode thing. Maybe just stretch the storyline out a little bit longer. But I don't think you could do like an episodic with various seasons.
Sure. And I sure wouldn't do like a 30 minute version. Yeah, that was kind of odd.
Yeah.
Well, that is Dirty Dancing, the TV show. So I, you know, it's another movie that should have never been made into a show. And if you're going to do it, why make changes? And if you're going to do it, try to do it well. Yeah. I don't understand. I just don't get it. But that is S2, E2 of Fanacek. And as always, stay tuned for the next episode of Fanacek. So that was Dirty Dancing, folks. That was Season 2, Episode 2 of Fanacek, another movie that should not have been made into a TV show. I want to thank my guest, Luna. She did a great job putting up with all my incessant bullshit and all my facts that she probably didn't care about and couldn't follow. Hey, thank you for listening. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can find me at Fanacek Podcast. Also, Real Fanacek is my Facebook name. Getting a lot of new Facebook friends, which has been fun. Hit me up if you want some Fanacek merch. I've got some stickers that I've actually had some requests. So I'm mailing those out now, which is kind of neat, to Arkansas, which is funny. And what else? Email me, fanacekpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanacek.